Hey, what's going on, everybody? Mike Mell here, February 13th. Just want to cover an article I wrote, I think it was maybe a week or two ago. It was comparing the worst periods of the typical buy and hold equity index versus the multi-asset diversified trend following style. For that, I used the BTOP 50. We're only limited to going back to 1987. We could go back further, but there'll be more hypothetical track records since firms don't go back 100, 200 years. But so we're just gonna have to make do with this. And it also, I think it proves the point of what I'm gonna make. And it also kind of works in the in this case, the S&P's favor, because it doesn't include periods like the, obviously the post-depression, the 70s, 60s as well. Very long and deep drawdowns that, on the chart don't look very great for those indexes. As we get further away, they're kind of hard to see. And people forget. People die and move on, so they don't know those days. They don't remember them. They don't think they're relevant anymore. But anyway, here we go. Obviously, it's been no secret that diversified trend followings had a rough go of it the past 5-10 years, and I think this is a a good lesson into the limits of back tests and just other, looking at other traders who have been around for, 30, 40 years. It's just not enough data a lot of times. We need that 100, 200, 300 plus, even more. Hopefully one day we'll have like thousands of years worth of data. And we could see like, 5-10 years as we've been in now isn't that big of a deal. You don't even see it on the hypothetical investment chart. It just looks like a little blip, doesn't even look like anything. But when you're in it, obviously it hurts really bad. It feels like forever. It's a lot of days in a row that you're sitting there waiting for things to improve and then they don't. I just want to go out and say that I think trend following, has this weird standard to it. I'm not sure why. But if you go into the post, I can't show you the charts here, but if you go into the post, you could see the charts, comparing the drawdowns. And, I know it's only since 87 and all that, but the trend following drawdowns, just pale in comparison, both in size and length, to the S&P in this case. And the S&P in this case, what everyone, a lot of the buy and hold crowd likes to use as their proxy, it seems like they have an ever receding index to use to prove their point, which is just buy and hold, don't bother doing anything else. It always goes up over time, so just keep doing that. And guys will bring up Japan. Well, what about that? What about Europe? And maybe at one point they were using those to prove their buy and hold point too. Push that agenda. But it's only a matter of time. We just haven't had one lately, maybe for the S&P, for it to go through, a 20, 25 year plus period for that to experience like a deep drawdown and a very long drawdown. Obviously Japan, we know that. It's been a drawdown since the 80s. Europe as well, there's some indexes there that just haven't done anything, haven't recovered since 09. Italy comes to mind, and it's a big economy, a big deal. Will it only be a matter of time before it happens here again? Probably, because it's already happened here. It's just happened a long time ago, and that's almost forgiven. Like, we don't look back that far, it doesn't count. Those are the old days. Those are unsophisticated markets. That doesn't happen anymore. Okay, we'll see. But anyway, I feel that the you know, the standards for trend following, and what I really believe is that, you know, the trend following has created a new standard for investing. Like, I feel that, you know, the guys who cooked this up many, many years ago were motivated by, yeah, I think just creating a better product for themselves and, you know, for their friends, family, and then create a business out of it. You know, they think they saw, especially during that time, they saw the limits to buy and hold. You know, in the 60s, 70s, you know, stocks weren't doing well. You know, they weren't going really anywhere. They were sloshing around for 20 years, not making new highs, just kind of in a stuck pattern. And then people, like the trend following guys, just got, you know, got their ideas and say, oh man, what can we do to like get better than this? Because this is awful. You know, and that's when they went into, you know, I think the commodity markets, other markets, you know, bonds and currencies, not just being stuck in stocks all the time. And, you know, lately, you would have liked that. You would have liked to have been stuck in all stocks. Diversification hasn't really helped in the past, you know, 5-10 years. But these are all, you know, cycles. You know, we think that we can, you know, improve upon the, you know, we know we're going to have bad periods, but we're trying to have less bad periods and not as, you know, in terms of a drawdown size, not trying to have them as big or be in them as long as in index funds. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, if you go into the post, I show a couple of, couple of charts. I normalized the volatility to the S&P's annual standard deviation and just show a hypothetical, you know, investment from, you know, the BTOP 50's inception, which is 1987 through today. And below that, I have just, you know, simple statistics, the annual return, volatility, the worst loss, return to volatility, and the return to max loss. So just rattle off these for a sec, you know. You know, so the BTOP 50s produced about 10.25 return over such time, while the S&P has done 7.9. Annual volatility for the BTOP has been 14.5 versus just a little slightly higher for the S&P. And, you know, where this really shines is S&P's worst loss, the BTOP 50's worst loss, which is 22.5, and the S&P's 52.5. And, you know, so not only do you get better absolute returns, you know, higher compound annual return over time, but you get a better gain to pain ratio. You know, the return to vol for the BTOP 50 is 0.71, S&P's 0.54, and the return to the worst loss is 0.46 for the BTOP 50 and 0.15 for the S&P. And remember, the S&P, I took the best one generally over time because America has been great, you know, stocks have been great, economy's been great, so the performance has been really good. We don't have, if we were in a drawdown period now for the S&P, I believe that these numbers would look much, much better in selling the BTOP 50 and the trend following approach. And I think what's also a good chart underneath these is the drawdown, you know, comparing the drawdowns is calculated every month from 1987, and you know, you just get a feel for how deep S&P drawdowns are and how long sometimes it takes them to come back. And remember, this doesn't include the worst drawdowns in it for the S&P. So, you know, those guys should be thanking me that I didn't include that data. You know, I didn't include it because I didn't want to compare it to a hypothetical track record and hypothetical index. I just used, you know, as much data as I could to get some real trend following records in there. Sure, I could pick out, you know, one manager here or there, but, you know, I'm not sure if that would be as, you know, people would, you know, scold me for cherry picking and things like that. So I won't do that. So I'll just use the index of a bunch of managers, since it does have survivor bias in it, you know, since, you know, some firms that didn't get big or, you know, dropped out, you know, they're no longer included. But, you know, the S&P has survivorship bias too, and that it kicks out, you know, the market cap companies under 500. So yeah, they both have biases. That's the point of, I think, of a system, is to, you know, cut those losses and don't track them anymore. But anyway, you know, so I think, you know, what we're seeing now is we're seeing the BTOP 50 in its worst drawdown right now. And since 87, it's been its, you know, yeah, deepest and I think the longest in it. You can get a feel for that on the chart. There's a lot of space between, you know, the current, you know, the current level and going, you know, getting back to the surface, if you will. You could see a nice gap there. Still nowhere near the severity of the S&Ps, but you get the idea. Take a look at that chart to get more of a feel. And, you know, I think now's like, you know, a pretty good time, you know, to look at these things, to look at, you know, trend following investments. You know, a lot of people call them managed futures. You know, it might just be, you know, a good idea to get yourself acclimated, take a look at some managers, take a look at, you know, some mutual funds, whatever you want to do. You know, like all drawdowns, they don't last forever. You know, same goes for stocks, same goes for trend following, same goes for any other strategy out there. They do have periods of good and bad, and it's, you know, I think we lose that sometimes when we're under the microscope. We put, you know, put performance under a microscope every day, week, month, and, you know, very short-term look backs, and, you know, we're always demanding the world of these strategies, especially when we call them alternative to buy and hold, because we just think it's more complicated or this or that. So we hold them to a higher standard. But, you know, some of these things make sense, and it's really hard to argue with data. You know, I don't like to, you know, do too much math here to, you know, skew numbers in my favor, what I'm trying to sell or what I believe or anything. I'm just trying to show, you know, straight up performance from now to then, and try to keep it as even as I can. So yeah, I think, you know, feel free to reach out to, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, trend following managers out there now talking and, you know, doing podcasts and, you know, writing on Twitter and stuff, and, you know, reach out to them. You can reach out to me if you want, you know, ask us questions. We're trying to, you know, trying to get out there and trying to, you know, show the world what we have, you know, not be limited in our little weird alternative corner of the investment world. You know, I feel like the diversified trend following, you know, which is not just investing in stocks, but, you know, bonds, futures, commodities, and whatever else that's liquid out there. You know, not just being long, you know, sometimes not investing at all, going and taking shorts as well. We're trying to create a new standard, you know, create a new index, create a new, you know, thing that you can buy and hold that's better. You know, don't buy and hold the stocks only, you know, and only be long type thing. That surely we could do better than that. That's a simple one. There's a lot of people out there who don't want to try to do anything better than that. They'd just rather copy and, you know, lower their fees and, you know, do whatever else, but look pretty similar to that, you know. There are people out there that are, you know, doing better than it over time. You know, again, they don't outperform every day, every week, and, in every case, every like 5 to 10 years, but over long periods of time, 10, 20, 30 plus years, these things, the cream rises to the top, in the end. And I feel that, Trent Frelin's going to do its thing again, and we're going to win, and we're going to say, I told you so. But hopefully we get, some investors to, take a look in these poor times. And I feel like that's, part of my job is to, educate, especially in the crappy times, because they just won't last, as well as the good times won't last. But now I feel it's an opportunity to take a look, and if it's appropriate for you, take it further with however you like. So I think that's all I have today. I will talk to you guys next time.